Are we live?
Here we go.
I think we're live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the October 21st edition of the Independent Podcast. We welcome you, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, wrestling fans of all form and fashion. We thank you for joining us. We're going to have a lovely time right here on the program. My name, your host, the Intrepid Yell Chaos. Joining me, one of my favorite wrestlers of the past 20 years, a great man and an injured man, unfortunately, Mr. Rob Martin. Robbie, how are you today?
What's up, man? Doing great. This is my show, by the way, Yell. Okay, you have your own show. It's my show.
I'm doing it right now. No. You got it last time, and then you got all nervous, so now I'm going to take the reins here, and we're going to do it. We're going to do it right. We're going to do it right by every single one of you. We thank you for joining us, and we hope you enjoy the program. I was going to say intrepid, but you're not intrepid. I'm intrepid. We are monstrous wrestling fans here to bring you our opinions and feelings on the state of professional wrestling, not just independent professional wrestling, but that of those going on in corporate circles and those people in the middle who, you know, like to smell their own farts, those people. So before we get the program going, I want you to know that we are both on social media. You can find us. Myself, YellKS, you find it. Just find my name over there on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram if you want to argue with me, because I look forward to your comments. I look forward to your opinions, especially from you fucking assholes that think you know everything. I'll be glad to have a chat with you. And
those are the best ones. Those are the best ones. My Instagram, you can find me at Death2Martyr, and Twitter, Left Dead or Alive. And you can just put hashtag the Independent Podcast, Indie in all caps. Pendant, lowercase. So, yeah, let's get this started.
All right, and we appreciate you. Make sure to use that hashtag so we know what in the hell you're talking about. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Robbie, we got to talk about something. The elephant in the room, something that everybody's talking about, so we got to talk about it too, and it's because it strikes me in a strange way. The WWE Crown Jewel in Saudi Arabia coming up not too far from now. When is that show?
I actually don't know because
that's a shame, because neither do I, because I don't think I'm going to watch the program anyway.
I mean, they've been pushing this agenda for, oh, it's the crown jewel, crown jewel, crown jewel. And the thing is that I've noticed that nobody gave a fuck that it was in Saudi Arabia in the first place, other than the reason of that journalist being killed, because if that journalist wasn't killed, nobody would be, you know, complaining.
It was something that was a dull roar. People just were concerned about them doing business with the Saudi Arabian government, a government not known for their leniency towards their people, you know, the people that fucking pay the taxes and make sure that things go around. So when you have a government perceived as tyrannical and is doing direct business with an entertainment company who is clearly trying to do some sort of image reinforcement, or if not a reinforcement, definitely a makeover, and it's very clear that that's what one of Saudi Arabia's agendas has been. They have been doing a lot to reach out to Western media outlets, and in effect, I think to rush towards their goal of what they call Vision 2030. We got a little bit of Vision 2030, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, I can't really explain it right here on the program. So please Google on your Google machine Vision 2030, and you'll see exactly what I mean.
You said makeover. It's almost like America in the 1940s.
It could be construed that way. But one thing that's clear is, and if anybody who watched the Greatest Royal Rumble, the last program by WWE to originate from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, you'll notice that we were treated to a lot of, let's face it, propaganda images. Videos, cut very much in that, oh, very nice, very safe Apple keynote way. You know, look, we are changing the world for the better, and we have nice beaches and people with muscles, so we must be okay. And women can drive now. We're giving women rights, because that means that we're hip and with it and with the times, and you don't have to be afraid to come here and bring your goddamn tourism dollars here, because that's what this is about. This is about tourism dollars, because people are losing interest in Disneyland, maybe? I don't know. What I do know is that this, and I shouldn't say I know, but the way I feel about it, we talked about this earlier in the week, myself and Robbie, about how this is not that dissimilar from WrestleMania 9. Now, WrestleMania 9 commonly makes its name on a bunch of lists, you know, typically worst WrestleMania of all time. And Which it's not necessarily fair if we're going to talk about every single WrestleMania. There's been 34 of them, you know, from the finish. And if you don't know the results of WrestleMania 9, I'm not going to break it to you here. You can get yourself over there to the WWE Network and you can watch it in its entirety. And then you'll appreciate why some people want to put it on the worst WrestleMania list. But for those of you who don't know, WrestleMania 9 took place in 1993, I want to say that's either the late winter or early spring of 1993, at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas, Nevada. Now, this is the first time that WrestleMania had ever come to Las Vegas, but definitely not the first for professional wrestling. Las Vegas, known still to this day as a wonderful wrestling town, people who love to be entertained. I wish we had more of those people here in wrestling circles. But what WrestleMania 9 was Caesar, I can't remember, over there at the corporations, they keep changing their names so you never know what crime they're responsible for. But the company that owned Caesar's Palace at the time paid Vince McMahon and Titan Sports, the World Wrestling Federation, a ton of money to come over and give WrestleMania to Las Vegas to build a fake stadium and put Hulk Hogan on the card. So make sure that we understand that Las Vegas was the premier family-friendly vacation destination in all the world, if not at least in the United States, to change their image, to make sure that we don't think that there's, you know, fellatio going on in every corner and that there's just gambling tables at the preschools and ATM machines, you know, at McDonald's and whatever they have, you know, which that later came to be the case. But a whole bunch of that. And for those of you who don't know, if you just watch WrestleMania, you don't really get it. But if you contrast and compare that versus the greatest Royal Rumble, you have to understand that WrestleMania, they spent a whole week in Las Vegas. There was an entire episode of Superstars, an entire episode of All-American Wrestling, an entire episode of Wrestling Challenge, which was all the shows produced by them at that time, showing Mean Gene Okerlund and Bobby the Brain Heenan going around saying, "Is it Las Vegas wonderful? Oh, we're going to go over here, and Misney and Mr. Perfect, we're going to throw away our life savings at the crap table because it's America, baby." Making us believe that this is acceptable and that these are the things that go on. You'll go there and you'll make millions of dollars and you'll have a wonderful time and you can bring your family. And then we fast forward into the future where if those same people with the same cameras, the same equipment, the same know-how are telling us that, boy, things are wonderful over here and you can come over, spend your money in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and your women, they can do things. No, they're not getting stoned in the street for looking at other men. No, that's not what happens here. this is family friendly and aren't we wonderful people? You should come here and spend your money. That's what the Crown Jewel looks like to me.
Speaking of WrestleMania 9, wasn't that the same show where Jim Ross debuted as an announcer?
That was the first show where Jim Ross debuted, and Jim Ross, much higher pitch, long before the Bogards and what have you.
Yeah.
And really, it was a real fish-out-of-water segment, so if we could do anything is plug WrestleMania 9 for the first appearance. And one of the few times I'm aware that Jim Ross working directly with Bobby the Brain Heenan, in fact, I think the only time on a pay-per-view. I could be mistaken. I could be wrong, but I don't think we see Jim Ross for very long after that. WrestleMania 9 was not Jim Ross's fault. I want that to be known. I want that to be public record. It should be on t-shirts everywhere.
You make a good point. It's all about image for Crown Jewel. For some reason, WWE's trying to play America and be like, hey, we're going to try to change a completely different country and continent's ideologies just because we can.
The church has said that they're going to go and civilize a land. You know, we're going to go and we're going to teach these savages. That sounds like a really good way to talk to people, you know. But then again, it's been part of the booking process for Islanders for a very long time. No, they don't know any better. It's okay. That's why their heads don't hurt. But these are things you have to understand. And that's what this really comes off is this is a PR push because Saudi Arabia reached out to other brands to come to them. Why do you think other people haven't gone there before? They had to go all the way down to pro wrestling. An entity whose flagship program in Western media now receives less than 3 million viewers.
which is unfortunate.
Yeah, which means that they went down the line. They went NFL. They went Major League Baseball. They went National Basketball Association. They went all the way down the chain. They may even have gone to NASCAR, which is about as American as you can get, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And the last one to pick up the phone was Vince. And Vince turned down money? Never. My goodness. Because if we've learned anything throughout professional wrestling, Vince doesn't like wrestling, but he likes to sell stuff. Boy, do we know that.
And, whoa, yeah. That was, my scissors fell.
That's scissors weird. Falling, my God. Is Sid over there?
Oh, Jesus
Christ. If Sid's over there, you call me. I'll come over there and help out, you know. But on the other hand.
You, like, Vince is, I mean, for the amount of money that they're offering Vince is ridiculous. And I don't know if you heard about this, but for Crown Jewel, they offered The Rock and WWE $20 million to have The Rock champion before Crown Jewel, to show up to Crown Jewel as the WWE champion and win and then go home. But basically, yeah, they want that's why you have fucking DX returning for literally no reason.
We should neglect to mention these are the same people that offered an insane amount of money for them to bring over Yokozuna and the Ultimate Warrior. Years after their untimely passings.
What?
Because I don't think...
How did they not know that, you know, that was... They were not...
Because they don't know the product. They don't care. This is about name recognition. If this Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, who is known, especially if you turn cable news on, as the heels of the planet, they have all the goddamn money and they have all the goddamn buildings and the women aren't allowed to drive and gay people are stoned to death in the streets, all right? If they have a mark with them, for instance, Walmart. People don't like Walmart, right? There's good chunks of people who have all sorts of bad things to say about Walmart. But Walmart has a McDonald's inside. And people, even though people say bad things about Walmart, you never see an empty McDonald's. Ever.
Never.
And that's what you do, is when you saddle yourself up with a brand name like that, it is hard for people to turn away. Like, oh, but it's so wonderful, because people think that's sustenance. WWE, well, you can't be bad because you got WWE and they have all these people. And that's exactly how brand naming works, or at least the way they hope it works. And that's the way the old guard, the corporate America of the 70s and 80s and into the 90s, the ones who ruined the fucking economy. These people have taught the world to think that way. And that's what's looked at as a Western way of thinking. And the West is always looked at as being very free, when that's really not the case. And that's dangerous thinking to believe that.
I realize that I guess the whole philosophy around Crown Jewel, and I've heard a lot of, has anyone from WWE addressed this situation about the outrage of people?
What I understand, and I don't know where this quote comes from, so please don't beat up on me. I'm just the messenger. Is that they are monitoring the situation. What I have noticed is that recent and even press material I'm looking at right now do not play up or even so much announce the venue or the country of origin. So it's clear that they know that there is some sort of argument, there is some sort of backlash, and if I want to watch this thing, I have to watch it at 9 o'clock in the morning. So that's fantastic. So that is very much being dialed back. I do not doubt that, because there's, of course, the calls to cancel the Crown Jewel. That's the big talk right now, is to cancel the Crown Jewel.
I saw on a British news outlet, JBL being the spokesperson for WWE confirmed,
which is always a good thing, right?
Yeah, and he said that it's confirmed that they are not canceling the event. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you could throw that one out of the window, unless there's like a bomb that's going off. You know,
I don't know. It worked for WrestleMania 7, so we'll see.
I mean, Jesus. I mean, like, that brings me to another question. I don't really think there's ever been a mass tragedy in wrestling, ever.
Well, you'd have to define mass tragedy if you mean
like a legitimate tragedy. Like,
oh, you mean what you mean to say is a terrorist action during one of these things?
Or something like that.
Well, it's very unlikely because you're not about to hurt a large group of people. Because, again, this is a show that garners less than 3 million viewers.
Well, it wasn't like that always, so.
No, it wasn't like that always, but you notice how they're coming knocking now.
Yeah.
And they're taking this big payday, even though I'm supposed to believe that money has never been hotter. So we'll see how this thing plays out. We really will. But for those of you that thinking that that this is just, oh, they're just a victim of circumstance, like, PR pushes are not a new thing for Titan Sports. So I want that to be made clear for that. I think that's really all that can be said at this point. We'll see. I understand that they have changed the venue, so we'll see. But also, a word of advice for Saudi Arabia. If you're trying to change your image, state-sponsored murder is not the way to go about it. I just want to lay that out there, okay? Now, with that having been said, speaking of organizations sponsoring murder of things, Austin Aries. Austin Aries.
Thank you
so much. Austin Aries, the miserable prick amongst the business notorious for miserable pricks, is garnering headlines. Rob, did you follow this at all, this buildup he did to Bound for Glory? The manipulation of the social media and such. What was your take on all of that?
I mean, people were obviously, as Twitter would be, furious. And there were many memes on Austin Aries. And I noticed that, like, the thing that Austin said wasn't the most offensive that it could have been, but people were still extremely offended because fat shaming. The buildup was, I mean, the only thing that really made this match worth watching was that, you know, people were really mad about it. I mean, they worked the whole angle where they did the press conference and Austin Aries was speaking and Johnny Mundo, whatever you want to call him, John Morrison was in the sea of people that were there, and it was a press conference, and I guess Austin referenced the same tweet that he said about Morrison's wife Taya. And then they got into it, and then, you know, they signature. Everybody's fighting in the press conference now.
That's sure.
Yeah, it was weird. I feel the whole thing was just really weird.
Well, of course it was really weird because, number one, it was being put together and demonstrated by two people who've clearly never been in real fights in their entire life. It was very much by people who garner their idea of reality from watching reality TV. This is the kind of thing, the kind of skirmish that would take place on the Steve Wilkos show. And for a few days, there was discussion. Was this a work? Was this a shoot? As soon as Solomonster, I'm going to shout out to Solomonster because he was there, caught it on his phone. That's where I first heard about it. And yeah. I knew it was a work immediately because all the dudes in suits who were, this is supposed to be their thing, their event, just stand back and are filming it on their phones. If I have a lot of money invested and my company is riding on something, I don't whip out my phone. I mean, unless that counts as like for insurance purposes, that's the only reason I could think you would do that. But that's one thing that really gave it away. And just how they were magically, it's the security situation was just immense. Like these guys were able to keep these, they had to do a pull apart 3 or 4 times and got them every time. There was no striking. There was no, you know, I guess somebody got hurt. There was a throwing of a book bag. You know, that's just how these things go. You know, what one thing I will say about it, and I don't want to talk about the build before we talk about the ultimate, you know, the controversy in the match, because this was controversial all the way around, which is controversy sells. I will not argue that. You know, that's very true. And but also it can sink you and for multiple reasons. But this was something that, and you and I have talked about this over, you know, the course of this show and how long we've chatted, is that this is something that needs to take place in an era where people, the lines have been blurred so much to where everyone thinks they know everything.
Yeah.
It's so easy to work the ones who are the smartest. That's when you can really make sure that all the lines, all the pieces of the puzzle fall into place. This was done because it did look like two bitchy teenagers arguing with each other, and people do get upset because people, You'll meet people in your life who act as though they are in a movie. I better do something or people will think I'm a bitch. Even though we're in a public place and you could be sued for thousands of dollars. But that's just how men are, it seems. Well, at least that's what I'm led to believe. But the point is, this had people talking. It really did. And that's one thing that I thought was brilliant about it is that, I mean, I knew it was a work from, you know, from the word go, just because, again, I'm from California. I've seen a real fight before. You know,
yeah.
I live in the densely overcrowded, you know, parts of the southern part of the Los Angeles megalopolis. I have seen real fights. Okay. I have seen someone try and stab somebody with a broken bottle. Okay. They just look different. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
This was also going on in a restaurant. So, you know, it just didn't seem right. Unfortunately, it kind of sullies. I thought to myself, it sullies Abyss's moment because it was during Abyss's induction into the Hall of Fame. What business they have having a goddamn Hall of Fame, I don't know. But I'm not going to take that away from Abyss because Abyss is the only fucking believable guy there.
I never liked Abyss's work.
I'm not saying I like his work. I'm saying it's like he's a wrestler. You don't see him in movies. He doesn't go do other stuff. He wrestles for a living.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of what you want to say, he's wrestling through and through and somehow feeds his family that way. Bravo. I mean, this dude lived through the TNA Dixie Carter regime where they're not fucking paying people and he manages to survive. And so I have respect for that. You know, somebody who, again, I don't really like what he does, but I do respect the way that he does it. You know, if that makes sense, you know,
yeah,
it's like, I may not like the way you express yourself, but you're expressing yourself and that's good and that's healthy for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way I feel about it. And then we move, you know, so it struck me as funny. It didn't look quite right. Cause again, I've seen a real fight. I've seen what it looks like when people are really mad at each other. And this didn't look like that, but it had people's attention and people were excited and people for once were actually caring, had a reason to go to see a wrestling show as opposed to it just being a demonstration of people who are essentially auditioning for movies that will never be produced. That's what a lot of professional wrestling is today. And which you can understand that because it seems to have worked for other people. But it seems there was a genuine buzz around this show. Even it was in this little bitty, what was it, the Melrose Ballroom in New York City, this little bitty place. And I love how auditoriums get to be called ballrooms and then their fucking value just like triples, you know, overnight. I just think that's fantastic. I need to get into real estate. If you want to peddle bullshit and religion's not working out for you, real estate is the place to go. That's career advice from Yo Chaos. So, and you can thank me at Twitter. Make sure you do that with hashtag independent podcast. I want you to do that for me now. But the very next night at Bound for Glory, did you watch the match? Because I only saw the last bit of the match.
I watched the match. It was, you know, for somebody that I really never cared about, John Morrison, and, you know, somebody that I have cared about and then stopped caring and then kind of cared again. It was a good match. It was really good. And it really sold on the fact that as far as Don Callis on commentary and whoever the fuck else, they really sold on the fact that, hey, these guys, I'm putting air quotes now, hate each other. And, you know, it felt important for once. And then came the finish.
I understand that now. Austin Aries sells, what does he call it? Starship Pain? Is that the finish move?
Yeah, that's the...
Describe that move. Give me some wrestling jargon for the people who don't know.
It is a springboard split-legged twisting moonsault.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. You did that far better than I could. And that's exactly what it was. Sounds a little painful. Sounds like if you did that, landed on my rib cage, that would blow the wind out of me and I would hurt for just a minute. Just a minute. 3 seconds is really all you need, isn't it? I understand. Receives the pinfall, hooks the leg, 1, 2, 3, and then immediately what happens? Springs to his feet and...
And he just gets up and he looks at everyone and then he gets out of the ring. He doesn't get out of the ring. He stays on the apron. And then he says, fuck you to Don Callis. and he repeatedly says, "This is your fault. Go fuck yourself." And then he walks down, you know, the ramp, flips everybody off. Everybody in the crowd flips him off, and then that's it.
And then that's it. Yeah. And everybody's left scratching their head.
Yeah, but the best part about this, if you really watch the video, I'm sure many of you have, as soon as Aries gets up, they're just like, everybody's like, yes, finally, because they've been building John Morrison to win the title for at least a year and a half. Yes, he finally did it. Aries stands up. Oh, what? And they're just really confused. And then he flips off the crowd and everybody's just like, fuck you for ruining this. And then people are still cheering. I think Morrison and Taya cry in the ring or some shit. But also, I forget to mention, during the match, there was supposedly an unplanned suicide dive on Taya, who was not part of the match. And he just basically, I think Aries hit like an enziguri or some shit. And Morrison was selling. Taya was on the outside. Aries hits the ropes and just murders her. Just fucking, like, if wrestling was real, that's what a real suicide dive would look like. Like, for real. Like, Aries just slammed her right into the guardrail. Her head knocks back. It was nasty. So that, I might believe that one, because, you know, it's not far-fetched for Aries. I really don't think it's
No, from what I understand, and I'm not terribly familiar with his work. I've seen some of the things he did in Ring of Honor and so on. And if anything, I'll believe about Austin Aries that is he is a miserable little prick. The world is not his, and he does not understand why. And that's, I mean, I hate him. I've never met the man. I hate him.
I think I told you that Jim Cornette called Austin Aries, and listen, Jim Cornette fucking hates everything besides Wendy's and George Carlin.
Well, no, and he likes the Andy Griffith Show.
Yeah, and he, this is, and Jim Cornette hates a lot of fucking people in wrestling, has met a lot of fucking people in wrestling, and has been through a lot of shit. He called Austin Aries the most miserable motherfucker he has ever met in professional wrestling in his life. And this man has worked at the prime of Shawn Michaels' bitch mode, all right? This man has dealt with this. So that's a huge statement coming from him.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's interesting. Regardless of, you know, what is said about Austin Aries, it breaks down to the deed. That's the way I really am seeing this, because then the question comes, because of course that negates the finish that completely, you know, ruins this moment that you've led the fans along for a year and a half for John Morrison, this fucking asshole from Survivor. When are people going to get this idea that reality TV people do not watch pro wrestling? It just plain doesn't happen.
And I mean, people care, which is fairly odd, because it's John Morrison.
Because it's John Morrison, the dude with the furs from SmackDown from back when I was in goddamn high school.
John Morrison, the guy that like had little crystals between his abs. I don't know if anybody remembers that, but he had fucking little like.
I do not remember this. Yeah, I'm suddenly revolted.
Yeah, no, like, he fucking had, like, I don't know what you call
suddenly it. Suddenly, I'm on Austin Aries' side. Like, you know what? Fuck John Morrison.
Yeah. And, like, I had a friend. He's a wrestler as well. And he's like, John Morrison is a pussy, first off. Because if any man touched my wife, that would have been fighting them right there. And the fact that John Morrison just stood there, let this man walk off by himself, just shows how much of a pussy John Morrison really is. That's not coming from me. That's coming from him. But, I don't know, man. This whole deal was just, it was interesting. I'll tell you that.
Absolutely. And that's when the thing that I have to say about it, I have to put it over and make sure that this is known, is this got people talking about Impact Wrestling. In a time when Impact Wrestling needs people to pay attention to them, this company has cost, if you include the TNA era, the Global Force era, all that stuff, this company has cost so much money to create the illusion that they have a product that anyone wants to buy, because they give away tickets, so don't give me that crap. They need eyes. This needs to be a profitable venture. Anthem has already dumped a bunch of money and already gone through a bunch of bullshit with the people that run this circus, that they need things to happen. So I understand why things are being done. But that breaks us down to the question of the finish. Was it a work? Was it a shoot? Now, there's been two camps of thought that I've noticed in the last week. And it's fascinating how things move so quickly that we have all these different camps of thought in such a short period of time. If it's a work, then you shit on the champion's moment that was a work in the first place, because why? Because it got people talking? Sure. But let's not forget that if it gets people talking, they'll want to see the program. But why would they want to see a program when the champion, the former champion, the chump, as Jesse Ventura would say, when the former champion gets up and tells everybody with his body motions, fuck you, all you people who paid for this, all you people who believed all the matches that happened before this, all the people that were into this match up until this point, fuck you, oof, fuck your money, fuck your parents for having you, and fuck this whole sport / art form. That's what I got out of it.
Yeah, and I have a friend of mine named Aaron. Shout out to Aaron real quick. But he made a really, really good analogy. This is if Vince Russo decided that he was actually going to be cool for once. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. But when I really think about it, if this was a work, this seems like some really Vince Russo bullshit. Like, why what the hell would you shit on someone's finish? That, and I'm going to be honest. Again, I'm not the biggest fan of John Morrison. But I don't remember the last time someone kicked out of the Starship Pain. I really don't remember a time. So you literally shit on this man's finish completely. Like, anybody who loses to the Starship Pain now is obviously the worst fucking wrestler I've ever seen. Because how can you fucking lose to a move that just somebody just got right back up from? So,
right?
And my whole thing is, if this was a shoot, number one, Austin Aries. Fuck you, man. Like, I'm a fan, but Jesus Christ, dude. Like, there's no... I know he was going to pull this shit in Ring of Honor with Samoa Joe because he didn't want to drop the belt of Joe, even though he won it from Joe. Like, it's just bullshit. It really is just bullshit. Don, I'm gonna give someone credit in Impact. Don Callis has been the fucking savior of this company because people are actually gonna start to give a shit about it because people of worth, I mean, at least to the independent community, is on the show. You know, you got fucking Ray Phoenix, Sami Callihan, who literally, in my opinion, put the fucking company on his back and then, like, I don't know, fucking scratched and clawed to bring it out of the fucking grave. And you just got so many great talents that are finally starting to be used to its full ability, slightly, almost. We're almost there. Just to see it just shit on, because this, again, Bound for Glory is their fucking WrestleMania. Why would you book this? Is my question.
Well, again, that strikes me as really following WWE's poor example of exploiting major events just to get people to tune in next week to the television program in an era where television ratings do not matter. Mm. So that's an interesting thing. And if you're right, and if it's a shoot, this has got to be the most selfish goddamn thing that I've ever seen in my life. However, it was later confirmed, and I understand, I'm reading a little bit about it, that apparently it is an angle for TV, which I don't know. I'm very much against, you know, assaulting the paying audience.
Yeah.
It's just really not the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Especially since, you know, some of those people did pay money and were paying attention. And then, again, it strikes me, and much like them putting so much attention on John Morrison because he's on some aged reality show, it seems like you're sacrificing your core audience, the people who are really paying money, in an effort to attract vapid new consumers through crash and flash and shock tactics. Now, I would be a fucking liar if I would stand right here and tell you that this is atypical for pro wrestling. In fact, I feel kind of ridiculous even talking about this at this point, having pointed these things out. But this is absolutely what you don't do to people who pay money to you. That's just the way I feel about it. But what the hell do I know? Am I working for them? No. Would I work for them? Well, you know, if the price is right, I might come on over. But it's not happening yet. So until that time, until I am hired to be, you know, because, you know, me, self-proclaimed greatest mind in pro wrestling, argue with me. I dare you. And you can find me at Twitter. Make sure, hashtag independent podcast. Gosh, goddamn Austin Aries. And, you know, whatever the case.
Paul Heyman.
Whatever the case. Impact Wrestling, they've got people watching, so
yeah,
hopefully they're smart enough to know that you strike while the iron is hot. If we could take anything from this, I don't like this. I don't like Austin Aries. I don't like Impact's sponsorship of shitting on the audience, the paying customers. But if we could take anything from this, the wrestling world is paying attention. Hopefully they can take the ball and run with it. That's all I can really say, because I will mention this. I figured out a way to get Impact Wrestling for free through, you know, one of the, because they're giving it away for free, you know, on some of the, I forget what you call streaming services that have advertisements, but I guess ad-based streaming services.
Yeah.
How about that? I figured it out all by myself. And so I'm watching Impact Wrestling through there. The product is getting better. It's not good.
I enjoy it. It's watchable. I can say that.
I will say that. And one thing that I love about it, I shouldn't say love, but that I really enjoy is, well, number one, the backstage segments, which I typically abhor and despise, have become so vague that they can't insult my intelligence. That to me is positive. Like it's just in some way they are doing things that are so vague that it doesn't insult my intelligence, and that is refreshing.
Not to cut you off, but I just realized something. Two things that have made Impact relevant again have been shoots, quote unquote shoots. One of them a real shoot. The other one in question. Sami Callihan and I can't remember his name. Eddie Edwards with the whole bat situation. That literally made Sami Callihan 10 times more worth than he already was. And people, like, now when people are like, oh, Sami Callihan, they know who he is, which they've known. But, you know, some people who are not more familiar, they're, oh, it's that guy from NXT that showed up and left. So, basically it brought him up tenfold. The story was good. I liked it. I don't know about anybody else, but the way they turned Eddie Edwards heel when he's supposed to be a face is amazing. And the way they did it, not to waste time, but the way they did it is Eddie legitimately wants to murder Sami Callihan, basically. He wants to legitimately kill him. And Tommy Dreamer, you know, slides in. He's like, hey, no. And his wife is, you know, rejecting him because, you know, he wants to murder someone. So Eddie Edwards turns completely insane. And he gets multiple times extremely close to killing him. And, you know, Tommy Dreamer steps in. They have a match. Finally, Eddie turns, you know, face again. And then we haven't seen him. I don't remember. We haven't seen him since. But the way they panned this out was really good. And now that they're doing, I guess, another shoot angle, because they turned this the Sami Callihan thing into a work. The way they're doing this now is very similar to the thing that dug them out of the grave, essentially. It's weird because, you know, they're even getting, I mean, TMZ is fucking horrible, but it's news nonetheless. It's news that people still, for some reason, watch. And
if McDonald's can be called food, then TMZ can be called news.
Exactly. So, and people know what TMZ is, all right?
People really don't know what McDonald's actually is, but please continue.
Yeah, exactly. So, at least we're clear on one thing. So they finally, you know, convinced the scumbag program called TMZ, you know, to broadcast their, you know, wrestling angle and promo and worked interview. Mm-hmm. But it worked. You know, people gave a fuck. So that's all that really matters.
Well, not only that, is it also totally shits on TMZ, which is difficult to do.
Yeah.
But
and they it successfully shitted on the notoriety of TMZ. It's great.
Oh yeah, it's also shit on the reputation of, you know, restaurants in Midtown Manhattan or true. Brooklyn or wherever the hell it was. Yeah, bad mouthing all of New York City for no apparent reason.
So I guess next topic, because I don't know.
Yeah,
really
but one thing I want to say about Impact, because, you know, might as well make some nice, is that they seem to be, and this is actually a slight, is that they seem to be filming at amusement parks.
Hmm. Well, I mean, they did that down here in Orlando. They filmed at Universal. That's where they filmed.
Okay. See, and what's interesting is that gives it kind of an air of like it's a special event.
Hmm.
And that's something that Monday Night Raw doesn't have. Monday Night Raw comes off as the same stale shit, just like Saturday Night Live every week. How they make different arenas throughout the country look exactly the same and feel exactly the same, I'll never know. But Impact, because they have less control over the production environment, it gives it a vibe of almost an event. The matches, they're going to vary in quality. So I want you to know, and this is brand new for me, I'm going to be paying attention to, you know, Impact has my attention. Do I care? Not necessarily, but I will be watching, you know, as long as I can get it fairly easily. And that's something that they're going to want to work on. So good luck to them. And we, you know, wish them well in the future. Speaking of people who need to be wished well in the future, the women of professional wrestling are in a terrible spot. Did you know that, Rob?
Yeah. Yeah, they are. They've been in for a very long time. And this
where would you say the best ladies professional wrestling is modern day, today?
Today, this sounds like a very fucking hipster thing to say, but Japan, I haven't seen one bad match. Not one. They're always solid. They work as hard as they can. There's nothing lazy over there. And this is not just specifically Japanese women's wrestling. It's like they have, the gaijins, so to speak, the foreigners. And they work as hard as the Japanese. So it's every match is good. Like, I have not seen one match, and I've been watching this consistently for at least 2 months. Not one bad match. Not one. And I mean, the psychology is great. The story, if you understand it, it's very underrated. Very underrated. Another thing I will say, as far as America goes, I'll give. Shimmer, a run for its money. I mean, it's all right at best, depending on who's in the ring. Like, Ariel Monroe is amazing. She was in the Mae Young Classic this year. Ariel Monroe, absolutely amazing. I don't know if you know, she's also in the Mae Young Classic. Her name is Lacey Lane, and I actually train with her. This sounds a little biased, but she's been wrestling for about 2 years, and she's already one of the best in the world. So, you know, as far as women go. So, you know, hats off. Really, really seriously, hats off. She was trained by the Dudleys. So, women have been, as far as women's wrestling, like you said, Chaos, in a private conversation, it's been treated more like a sideshow act than actual, you know, something to care about.
Oh, throughout its history, absolutely. I've always equated ladies professional wrestling, which is, you know, something that's saddened me, really, to say this, as being a fan of ladies professional wrestling since, I'm going to date myself, but the late 1980s. You know, going all the way back to when Fabulous Moolah was about to turn into dust. She wasn't dust yet, ashamedly. I'm sad that wasn't the case, but I'm glad she's dead now. But the fact remains, ladies wrestling, for much of its history, has really been treated as titillation, as foxy boxing, as look at these whores with their suits crammed up their ass and look at all the cleavage. And it seems like there's this idea that that's the only way to garner men's attention, when they're trying to liberate themselves for other women. So to say that, especially in the last few years, that there has been an evolution of women's professional wrestling is an understatement. All over the globe, things are changing. The things are getting different. I'm not fat, you know, thrilled with the outfits, but that's just the way things are. I'm not in charge of costuming, so it's not really up to me. But there has been progress. There has been, you know, an adjustment, and ladies wrestling is on a different level than it was just a few years ago. And who can take credit for that? Certainly not the World Wrestling Federation, who are about to have their WWE Evolution All Women's Professional Wrestling pay-per-view coming up on October the 28th at the Nassau Veterans Memorial Coliseum. And Rob, first of all, you've been following the Mae Young Classic.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the tournament? Because I have to admit, I'm a lazy prick. I haven't been watching it. I talk a good game, but apparently I'm just not up on things. How were things in the Mae Young Classic?
All right. So this year I have not watched enough to give a full review. I'm actually like, I think on the third episode and it's already finished.
Now, did you watch all of last year's Mae Young Classic?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. I enjoyed it a lot. It felt like, you know, it for the first time in a very, very, very long time, or even ever, at least to me, in the first one and a little bit in the second one, it felt like women were being taken seriously, finally. And it felt like, oh, this is something I can care about. And, you know, they did a really good job. There was I like the whole deal with different nationalities, different places, you know, debuts. There's actually, in the new Mae Young Classic, there's a girl who they say she was the first female winner of the American Ninja Warrior when she really wasn't. She was just a part of it and made it pretty far, but she never won. I don't remember her name, but
brilliant marketing.
Yes, but she was extraordinary, like on another level than anyone I've ever seen, on another level. And she has never wrestled before. Like, that was like her first match. Ridiculous. Like, the shit she can do. She's an acrobat. I think she does acrobatics and gymnastics. So, you know, when you have those type of people in wrestling, most people are going out of business. As far as, you know, like, when you have that type of a background where literally you can do fucking anything, it's really hard to look at anybody else, if that makes any sense.
Well, it's also those people are used to working without a springboard, so when suddenly you have three springboards all the way around you, you know, the imagination can really flourish.
Yeah, the crazy thing, one of the most craziest things I've ever seen was her entrance alone. Her entrance alone was fucking insane, because when she got it, she's at most, maybe like 5'1", 5'2". Like, she is ridiculously short. Like, her top of the head barely passes the rope. So, for her entrance, she comes in, she goes through, and she rock climbs the pole. I think she does like a flip into the ring. That was the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Little spider monkey she is.
Yeah, it was crazy. And she was doing all these, you know, lucha, of course, because she's an acrobat. But she did it in a way that I've, like, it felt new. But it was the same thing I've always been seeing. There was a certain style and flavor to it that was, like, really impressive. So, hats off to her. Everybody else, they brought a lot of the Japanese in this tournament. Miko Satomura, who is a absolute legend in female Japanese wrestling. She's been in wrestling so long that they actually had on an episode of Nitro, they had a women's wrestling match. Can you believe it? A women's wrestling match on Monday Nitro. Miko Satomura versus some other girl, but it was a Japanese showcase, and that was on Nitro, and she's still wrestling today. And this is on the prime of Nitro. We're not talking like late. This company's basically dead Nitro. We're talking about good Nitro. Half good, eh, Nitro, because Nitro's always been eh. But but yeah, so she's been around for a while. You have Io Shirai, who's been around not as long enough, but she's still incredibly amazing. You have another girl that I don't remember her name, but she's good too. You have Toni Storm, who is pretty big on the British indie scene, and she got signed, which is awesome because she's better than, in my opinion, she's better than 90% that's on the main roster of female wrestling in World Wrestling Entertainment. It's her and fucking Charlotte, and maybe in Asuka. That's really it. That's really fucking it. That's the only people I care about in mainstream WWE women's wrestling.
Yes. Now, you'll notice we've been talking about ladies professional wrestling for quite a few minutes now, and two names that have not come up were fucking Nikki Bella or Ronda Rousey. You notice
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
Why didn't we talk about that? Because that is not professional wrestling. Okay? Nikki Bella, or as I like to call her, Sable 2.0, has really been just a cancer on this business. I mean, am I wrong? A lingerie model that couldn't make it as a fucking lingerie model?
We can't forget about her sister, who's been literally injuring half of the fucking roster.
Yeah.
We're injuring herself.
So let's go ahead and make these people the flagship of ladies professional wrestling and make sure that they're at the forefront of the first ladies. This is not really the first major ladies supercard show, and supercard my foot. The first that match they had to announce was a fucking battle royal. What creativity does that take?
Yeah, and because they tried to basically were trying to cram as many women on the roster and in the performance center that they could.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm not bad mouthing the ladies, of course. This is interesting to me that all this is coming now and at this time that we're supposed to believe that this is the time for women to take the lead, even though there's not much history of women drawing a lot of money because they've never been paid any goddamn respect, though we're suddenly expected to believe that they can carry a 5-hour pay-per-view.
Hmm.
That's a really interesting thing to me, because this is supposed to be the new way. This is supposed to be indicative of ladies wrestling being viewed as a sport, as a threat, as something that'll really draw and is indicative of what people want, the mass audience wants, because it's women doing what women do. And apparently they think that all the, you know, the leftover housewives in America are going to tune in and get the WWF network just because of this, because the Total Divas experiment was an absolute failure. So I don't know why we keep going back to the Total Divas solution. The Total Divas.
Not to cut you off. Speaking of Total Divas, I read an article real quick, and I read the article that the Bellas, and notice that this is only the Bellas, are tired, are finally saying that the Divas word should be relinquished, that it should no longer be in use. So keep in mind, this is coming from the Bellas, who literally, they are the brand name of Diva. They're saying this, and people are all supporting it and everything like that, and that's fine. But I feel like people and WWE itself is marketing that the name change between Diva and women's wrestling is going to change the way that people look at it. That's not the case. That's not how it works. It certainly, you know, takes a couple stains off it, but that doesn't mean it's going to be the entire solution.
Oh, sure. There was this idea that calling it sports entertainment somehow made it different than professional wrestling. And we know that that has been an absolute failure of marketing ever since, for the last 30 goddamn years.
It's frustrating.
You notice that the Bella Twins, they're not walking away from this show, that because we now live in an era, at least in my opinion, my view of the world, is that Diva is a pejorative. That's a kind of woman that really only exists because of an economic condition of, let's face it, 10 to 15 years ago.
Yeah.
That's really the only spoiled brats, the show. Okay. Now you'll notice they're not saying, hey, we're leaving the show, or don't make the show about us. No, they're going to change the name. They want to remarket their same old bullshit. I'm expected to believe that this makes it any different.
I think
calling a hamburger a sandwich does not make it healthier.
And, like, they're calling Total Divas. I mean, I don't know how to explain this. I think the show, if they really want to prove a point, the show should just be destroyed altogether. That should not be televised anymore if they're really trying to make a statement.
Well, not only that, don't forget, this is a program that draws something like 350,000 viewers an episode per week, okay?
It's on the E, so it's a dying channel already.
Well, so, all the TV is dying. Let's not split hairs.
Let's just
break that down. Let's break down the business acumen there for just one second, okay? You're an advertiser, and you want to advertise over a specific block of programming. Total Divas, I think, is a one-hour program, or is it a half-hour program? Do you remember?
I think it's a half-hour. Okay. Hour.
Yeah, whatever, a specific block of programming, okay? And what WWE is telling everybody is that if you advertise over this show that we produce, okay, you are going to get 350 sets of eyeballs looking at this. Now, in marketing, you know not to expect total concentration, total penetration. You're not going to get 100% of the viewers to buy your product. You expect 50% at best. At best, you expect 50%. So what the WWE and creative and the people that are producing this television shows for advertisers so they can take in ad revenue, so people are paying to have their product in front of a certain viewership, what they're saying is, hey, we can get 175,000 people to buy, for the sake of argument, a Coca-Cola, okay? Watching our program, people, we can get 175,000 people to buy your product. That's at best, okay? Take that into account. That happens in every high school in the state of, let's just say, Florida at lunchtime in a day. In one day, they move that amount of units. They're going to pay how much money to advertise over this program? Okay. Suddenly the math is not working out. So it's not working for the sponsors. So they're going to take this thing that nobody is watching and they're going to make it the focal point of their so-called women's revolution. That's what I'm to believe.
It's a sticky situation in itself.
It absolutely is, because it will not let the marketing just be marketing. It's let's face this, and we talked about this in private conversation. I don't mind bringing this out in the public. This is Stephanie McMahon, who is notorious for running off talent and running off good hard workers who don't gel with her ideals. Her trying, much like Kathleen Kennedy works over at Lucasfilm, trying to get over with the college feminists. Somehow putting women in a prominent position is suddenly a good thing for all women. Never mind they're being objectified throughout the whole goddamn thing. And I'm led to believe that this is good for a sport. I don't believe that. And these are supposed to be people who are in charge of making me believe things. That's an interesting way of looking at things. It leads me to believe that things have really evolved. And that's the really sticky part of the whole thing, is this manipulation of language to believe that because it's them doing it, it's an evolution, that they're taking another step. This is the same shit they were doing in the 90s.
Keep in mind that the English itself is a manipulation of language. So
absolutely, absolutely. Everything's a portmanteau.
It's all misconstrued, and it makes me frustrated because, I really care about women's wrestling. I really care about, the way that it's presented, because I'm really tired of just people over-sexualizing it, and it's gone through that far too long. And, you mentioned something about college feminists. Not all of them are bad. Most of them, but not all.
No, but let's face it. Most of them don't watch pro wrestling. They don't go to live events, because what do? They get on their live streams and they bitch and complain about the patriarchy and all of these things. These are the people who are not spending money with WWE. Why are they marketing to people? Why are they trying? Why are they so desperately after dollars that, let's face it, it's a tree too high. There comes a certain point where climbing a tree for an apple is the danger of falling several stories to your death versus one goddamn apple is not worth the trouble.
Hmm.
And when will this be understood?
I don't think it will be.
And all the while, doing it with... It's one thing to market your product and say, hey, come over here and look at this. But then it's when the words do not even correlate to what you're selling. Ronda Rousey versus Nikki Bella. Ronda Rousey, a former professional fighter who's been knocked out 2 times in a row on pay-per-view and then immediately went to go work with the WWF to not talk about anything, versus Nikki Bella, a lingerie model who never quite got off the ground. This is the evolution. This is the apex of ladies professional wrestling. I'm expected to believe that. This is not good for professional wrestling. This is not good for, I'm not going to call it the women's movement, but the liberalization of women, women doing what it is that they want to do. I'm not opposed to that. I'm very much in favor of that. And that is not what this is. This is WWE, again, taking advantage of language in order to sell tickets. And all the while, if you would simply just put a card full of ladies wrestling, it would draw better than this is going to. I just know that.
Well, I mean, we've got our point across. I think it's time to move on.
I think we really have. And that leads me on to talk of, and this could be very brief, is that the ladies talk about them headlining WrestleMania 35. I think this is a slippery slope. This kind of talk before we've even completed the all ladies pay-per-view. What are your thoughts?
Not the right time.
So you would agree that it's a matter of timing even.
I feel like it's a matter of timing and a matter of consistency. For the reason being that this women's evolution bullshit, as far as the pay-per-view goes, that's not going to be consistent. And depending on the success of this, because I had a guy tell me on Twitter, women's wrestling doesn't sell, period. And I disagree, because multiple times that it's shown that it can sell. Not that it will, but it can. And a perfect example of that, Sasha Banks versus Bayley NXT. I think they NXT over that match, in my opinion, was one of the is probably the most talked about women's wrestling match in the last decade. So, like, the fact that people assume that women's wrestling won't sell, period, is just stupid. It's stupid.
It's stupid. It's ridiculous. It absolutely can, but that's the big word, can. And
you have to portray it correctly.
Absolutely.
You have to portray it correctly if you want it to succeed. And I don't think this can be, you know, done in a year's time or even less. So it's just not the right time. I think if they start making a huge change, if they treat every single woman as a sport, they treat everyone in the roster, not just, you know, Mae Young Classic, not just NXT, everyone. If they treat it as a legitimate sport that people can truly care about, I think it could work.
I hope that if anything comes from this, is that especially Stephanie McMahon, hope she's paying attention, understands that there's some things in life you cannot just hit the fast forward button.
That's true.
It's going to take time. It's going to take effort. It's going to take some studious, persistent timing, effort, talent, and creativity to make this thing work. I believe it can. This is not the way. So let's not put all our eggs in this basket just yet. That's at least the way I feel about it. Anyway, rounding the corner, getting towards the end of the program. We thank you if you've hung on for this long. We really appreciate it right here on the Independent Podcast.
Thank you,
Don't forget. Yes, yes. Thank you very much. And we look forward to your opinions. So please drop us a line over there on Twitter, over there on your social media with the hashtag Independent Podcast. Or if you think I'm a prick, you don't need to put a hashtag, because I'm used to that sort of thing. So please do. Want to close out the program talking about some matches. And this is something we promised a while back, and we got to talk about some old wrestling. Because I am notorious for this when I go out to the wrestling shows here in San Diego, California. Going out, and if you head out to those shows, you'll see me. You definitely will. And I run my fucking mouth about how nobody doesn't like they used to, which is a common thing amongst a lot of the old timers. And there's some merit to that. And a match that I want to bring up that I stumbled across not too long ago on, I want to say it was Amazon Prime, because there's a lot of the old wrestling has fallen into the public domain. So you'll find it on these compilations and different programs. They used to sell them on DVD. They don't bother anymore. Now they're all streaming. You can also find these on YouTube. So please feel free to look at them on YouTube and see what I'm talking about. That's the great thing about the era we live in, is all this stuff is fairly easy to come by.
No more tape trading. Yay.
No more tape trading, but that's now you don't have to talk to anybody, which, you know, could be a good, could be a bad thing, but that's not the issue. Mm-hmm. One match that really stood out to me, and I want to say, I couldn't get approximate dates, but I want to say it was 1954 at the old Hollywood Stadium, which is long fucking gone. Not the new Hollywood Stadium they're building for the San Diego Chargers up in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the old Hollywood Stadium back in 1954. Gorgeous George. This was grainy stuff. It was fantastic. If you saw me, I posted a picture of it on my Instagram. Make sure and check me out on Instagram if you're so interested. Gorgeous George versus Jesse James. Not the outlaw Jesse James, not the road dog. Okay. Different Jesse James, because, you know, and not the Jesse James wrestling today in True Grit out there on the indie circuit. Different Jesse James, a much different Jesse James, wrestling Gorgeous George in 2 out of 3 falls at the old Hollywood Stadium, contest being held up by the NWA way back then. And I'm not going to talk about the match so much, because it was, if you know anything about Gorgeous George and that style of wrestler, it was a lot of stalling, what we now call stalling or rest holds. But the way in which you really have to watch it, it's fantastic in the way that these men make it seem like this shit matters. Like they are wrestling for money, because that's something that's really lost in professional wrestling, is the professional part, is that you're doing this for money. You know, this idea that, you know, you just do this for fun. Well, some people just do it for fun, but the idea that they were doing this for money and having a real struggle. I saw, you know, moves like Gorgeous George breaks out the Indian Deathlock. It has been so long since anybody has seen the Indian Deathlock. But one thing that I really want to talk about that I thought was fantastic is, and I can't remember Gorgeous George, his valet, his manager, I can't remember his name, but the beginning part of the match, the referee is asking him to step in the ring, and he says, no. My valet has to spray the mat with perfume because these wrestlers and these goddamn people out here stink.
Gee.
That is brilliant, because my wife, who doesn't like professional wrestling, was watching this, and I said, don't you hate this guy? And she says, yeah, fuck that guy. someone who doesn't even care is like, yeah, that's fuck this guy. Then that's exactly how heat works. That is real heat. So, and then later in the match, after the first fall, he has to stop everything and tell everybody, and this is a bit of a dated reference, but has to have oxygen brought in. They brought in imported Florida air for him to breathe, because the air is so terrible because all these people, they stink.
Jesus
Christ. And he wanted everyone as like, fuck this guy, right? And anyway, I don't want to give away the rest of the two falls. I want you guys to go out there and check out this match for yourself. If you can't stand black and white, well, then you're a faggot. Get over it. That's Jeez. How you know. That's how you admire.
Listen,
great
listen, man. Art. All right, you can't say that on our podcast, because people are gonna blackball us before this thing even gets off the ground. Right?
Oh, come on! I saw a video on What Culture. There's a bunch of those people all throughout the wrestling business. Don't worry, we'll be fine. We'll be booked somewhere.
All right.
You live in Florida. What are you worried about? Anyway, and then we got to talk about, so I want you guys to go out and check this out, and then we're gonna make sure that you guys check these out. Rob, what's the one you showed me? You were talking about a great feud, a fantastic feud that I didn't know what to think until I saw what you showed me. Nick Bockwinkel versus Billy Robinson. Tell the people your feelings.
Great feud, and it spanned over. I showed you the links to each match. It started in 1970, ended it in 1992. So that's about 2 decades there. So
that's a hell of a run.
Yeah. And I don't know if this was consistently, but I know every match was important. So it started the first one that I sent you, and for everybody at home, I sent him the entire saga of I don't know if it was the entire, but every important match that happened between Nick Bockwinkel and Billy Robinson. And if you're not familiar with either one, Billy Robinson, pioneer of British wrestling period,
Don't forget, most people would know Nick Bockwinkel as Commissioner of World Championship Wrestling.
Yeah. And these two guys, I've heard a lot of Shun interviews, and that Bockwinkel was one of the only guys that could really hang with Robinson. Because when Robinson came to the States, you know, nobody could do that style. Because I learned, me being in pro wrestling, that it's a style that both people have to know. You really can't just know it yourself and then do it with someone that has no idea how to work that British wrestling style. So Bockwinkel was one of the only people in the States that really could capture that and be as almost as good as Billy Robinson. So, you know, they got booked everywhere. Like, even Vern Gagne couldn't catch up with Billy, which is ridiculous to think about now. So they had their final blow-off match, to say, was in, for all the hardcore Shoot fans out there, UWFI. You might have heard of it. It's the Shudo, or Shoot-style Japanese wrestling group, also known as UWF, in Japan during the mid to late 90s, and early 90s as well, that became defunct around, I want to say, 97 or 96, because, you know, actual MMA was starting to get popular than Shoot-style. So they had this quote-unquote special attraction match. You know, compared to everything that they were doing, this was nowhere near as realistic. But the crazy and fascinating thing about this match was that people fucking loved it. They almost loved it more than everything that happened on that card. They fucking ate it up. This was the best match. They popped at the end of the match. It was great. And you don't really see Japanese, especially during this time, popping.
Especially during this time, the Japanese audience is notorious for being very polite, very meek, you know, applauding at appropriate times. And to see a rip, I mean, this was like watching a Japanese ball game.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they get excited about baseball, and god damn, just the reaction that comes off of this crowd just to watch these. And this particular match that I'm watching from May of 1992, these dudes are in their mid to late 50s.
Yeah.
You know, it's just absolutely stunning to see what these guys are doing at this age. And
you know, like, Yell, you watched like a small part of the match. That first lockup, man, like they heard it was a Shoot-style promotion. They really like, I guess, were faithful to that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it was, you know, if you got the eye and you know what to look for, it's a work, but god damn, were they, because in this match, they are hitting hard. And to see guys that age, I mean, you know, what's, and they're brilliant at making it look like a sport. One thing that I think is lost for a lot of American wrestling audiences is they forget the British European style of professional wrestling has a round system involved.
So explain. Because I don't, but explain for everyone back.
Well, it really depends on the promotion, but I understand there's a round system consisting of, there's a lot of involvement from the referee. And one thing, and I've as much of that as I've seen, that's what always has driven my respect for professional wrestling authority figures, in the vein of not necessarily the promoter, but a commissioner or referees or members of the championship body and things like that. Those wrestling matches have lots of, and they also, rules that we're accustomed to is knowing like Iron Man rules, where the falls count as points. And that sort of thing. If you've never seen it, just look at anything Billy Robinson did, you know, before coming to the States. I can't really think of a lot of examples, because a lot of the great British wrestlers that we know from the States were guys that are fucking bullshit. And they just, you know, came to, you know, America to make money. But there, you know, again, there's a round system and a lot of heavily involvement from the wrestling referee, which is why when I see referees acting an ass in a professional wrestling ring because they want to be wrestlers and they're not being used that way, I think that's very much a shame and kind of shits on the product. But then again, that's just my view of it as a sport.
Yeah.
So if the matches look slow paced, that's because they are, because just the rules are not there in place. It's I'm trying to think of a sports analog and I can't, but it's very much a geographical thing. It's just, if you're not raised in it, you'd have to see a lot of it to really understand. But if you don't believe me, there was a point where people thought that the referee was a referee. Those were the days way back then.
I mean, thinking about it now, like looking back at this match specifically, this match, man, I don't know if I can't say any bad things about it, because to a Japanese crowd and that aren't expecting professional wrestling, quote unquote, which at the end of the day it still was, but the fans didn't know that because kayfabe is technically alive in Japan. They were expecting a MMA event. Mm-hmm. They put on a pro wrestling match that was a lot more aggressive than most things because, you know, they were trying to appeal to the shoot style, even mm-hmm. in their, you know, late 40s, early 50s age. Mm-hmm. They captured that, man. Like, I've watched the full match, and by the end of it, like, you just see people standing on their feet of how good of a contest this was. It was pure sportsmanship. And, you know, a lot of people like to, like, do that now in the indies. Oh, sportsmanship, we're shaking hands, you know, we raise each other's hand, we talk about how good they are on Twitter, and we put them over. No, this was pure sportsmanship. And that was the soul of this match. Speaking of soul, which we can go in real quick before we end this this episode, what's the soul of wrestling?
The soul of wrestling? I will tell you. The soul of wrestling are the rules of professional wrestling.
The rules.
That's something that I believe. If your professional wrestling doesn't have any rules, then why should I care? And well, the people that care, the kayfabe, the magic that exists between the people in the front row and the people in the ring, that's your soul. If it is the reason that your universe exists. Why do I give a shit about Hacksaw Jim Duggan? Because he scored a 3 count, or for whatever reason, the rules, the idea that this is a contest, that someone you like and someone you don't like are going to wrestle and going to figure this out until there is a solution. That is the soul of professional wrestling. There's more to it than that, and we're going to go to a lot more depth over the rest of the program over here in the coming weeks and months and years. We hope you're with us for a very long time, and we'll talk about that in greater detail. But as you can tell, I'm getting a little hoarse, so it's getting time to close the program. To review, ladies and gentlemen, again, thank you for coming to see us. We really appreciate it. Don't forget to check us out on the social media, on your Facebook, on your Twitter, on Instagram. Don't forget.
On all the on the computer machine. Make sure yes. you... like we've been plugging this entire podcast, please give us your thoughts, opinions, and your fuck yous through the hashtag independent podcast. Independent being the best podcast on the interwebs.
No, thank you, man. Not a controversial statement at all. So don't forget, we've learned that Austin Aries is an asshole and the WWE tells lies and
marketing. Yeah.
And with that having been said, we're going to get out of here one more time. I want to remind everybody that speaking of the shows, wrestling shows coming up down here in San Diego, California, I will be attending Fist Combat in Jolt Joe's in La Mesa, California, on Thursday, November the 1st. I know they put down a 7 p.m. bell time. That may or may not be true. We're going to find that out on November the 1st. So go ahead and check it out. And
also check out Punk Pro Wrestling's A Grave Affair. That actually happened today, but it's going to be on the interwebs sooner or later, so make sure you check that out, as well as Fleet Lance Underground in my hometown of Chicago. So thank you guys so much. This has been Yell Chaos and Robert the Loser. We'll see you next time.
Thank you so much, and here's hoping that you make all your troubles tap out. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.